Because if I talk to a front desk team member at any healthcare practice in the world and I say, hey, I'm going to get you a ton of new patients. Aren't you excited? Do they get paid any more money if they see 100 patients a day or they see 4 patients a day, right? They don't at all. So they're completely different incentives. So I have to talk to a front desk team member and say, hey, do you hate talking to people all day long about stupid things on the phone? They're like, yes. Cool. What if I could unload 40% of those phone calls for you? They'd be like, I would love you. Cool. Let me show you this product. And then you go to the doctor and you say, hey, doc, do you like making tons of money? Yes, I do. Cool. Let me show you. I'm going to get you a ton of new patients. So you have to be very specific on the problem that's actually hitting them. But that's how easy we talk about it. We say, do you like more money? Do you want more new patients? Right? We don't talk how we get it. We let the doctor ask the question and then we'll go into the details. If they don't want to go detailed, a lot of times you'll find on a sales process, you're talking yourself.
Good morning, everyone. This is the Healthy Idea Podcast by Iman and Nico. I'm Iman.
And I'm Nico. And on our podcast, we sit down with founders on how they're using new technologies to solve critical health issues that face our society today. We learn more about their journeys into entrepreneurship and how they started their company.
We hope to shed light on innovations in health and encourage you to think of what's possible with technology today.
Before we get started, Iman and I wanted to ask you to leave a review of our podcast on your favorite podcasting platform. Reviews play a huge role in reaching new listeners for the podcast, and it would mean the world to me and Iman if you did. Now with that out of the way, let's get into this week's episode.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Healthy Idea Podcast with Iman and Nico. Today, we have a special guest, Ryan Hungate, the CEO and founder of Simplify. Ryan, it's great to have you on the show today. Thank you for coming.
Thanks for having me. Really excited to be here. Yeah, absolutely. So the company is Simplify. We work in what I like to call the retail healthcare space. And I'm trying to get the phrase to catch on. I think of retail healthcare as people who really care about getting more new patients. And to compare that, if you think about your regular MD, they might make, you know, the same amount of money, whether they see 10 patients a day or whether they see 100 patients a day. Whereas you look at something like dentistry or optometry or, you know, plastic surgery, and each new patient adds incremental value to that practice. So we operate in that spectrum of the healthcare market. And really, it makes it a lot easier for, obviously, for decision making, but also to show value for each of those practices. A little background on me. I'm an orthodontist. So that's where everything started and why we are in the healthcare space to begin with. But prior to all of that is where my background gets a little bit unique. I actually worked for Apple out in Cupertino. It was a cool time to be at Apple. You could say I worked there during 2007 and 2008. So for those of you that know your Apple history, a little thing called the iPhone came out that year. And I was on the retail side of things. So I worked directly for a gentleman named Ron Johnson, who was the SVP of retail at that point in time. Angela Arntz ended up taking over for him. He was also the previous CEO of Target. So he really was this guy, and you can read all about him all over the internet, I'm sure. But he was this guy that really had passion about workflows and passion about the different systems that you could put in place to really improve an experience at a retail location. He's the reason that you have beautiful, wide, and bright aisles in Target, and that you would rather go to Target than Walmart most of the time, especially around Christmas. So I think that I picked up a lot of that passion from him. And I was responsible directly for the front of house retail workflow. And what's interesting is at the time while I was there, we didn't really have one. And all of a sudden we went from a ton of people in the store to an insane amount of people in the store. And I'll never forget because I remember sending my parents down, they live in Kokomo, Indiana, and I sent them down to Indianapolis to buy an iPhone because it was going to change their life. They had $1,200 in their pocket, they were going to spend it, and they got there and there were so many people in the store that they were intimidated to walk in. They left, drove a whole hour home and didn't even get the device. And I knew right then and there that we had a problem because if they had a pocket full of cash and they couldn't buy anything, that means there are hundreds of thousands of people in the exact same seat. So I told Ron, I was like, look, we got to kick people out of the store. And he thought I was insane, but he gave me a chance and said, hey, here's a few stores you can try out your theory with. So I started triaging people as they'd walk in. I strategically route them to the person who knew what they were talking about. We would ask them and double check and triple check with them to make sure that they had everything they needed. We mounted receipt printers underneath the desk. And then using the product and the receipt like a dog treat, we would take 5 steps towards the front door, and out the front door you would walk. And the store started to look a lot more empty, and they look a lot like they do now. Except what happens is you actually have purpose behind your workflow. And that's where it really instilled in me that if you don't have a purposeful workflow in any type of operation, then one kind of makes itself and it becomes a nightmare. It was about that time that a lot of my friends started getting through dental school, medical school, vet school. And being on the tech side of things, they'd always show off their software to me. And I remember looking at a couple of those softwares. There's the Dentrix, Eaglesofts, and Open Dentals of the dental world, and going, oh my God, you got to update. And they told me, I just did. And I remember thinking, oh my God, if Apple brought something like this out tomorrow, they'd go out of business. So I thought maybe I could get into this business and really do some damage. So I decided to go to dental school. Went to Indiana Dental School, went to USC for orthodontics. And it was there that I realized that the real problem wasn't that the software was just bad. It was because nobody there really understood the business portion of healthcare. Right? Nobody was thinking about that. And the reason is because it's not taught. I went through 7 years of school after my undergrad for dental school and ortho school, and I didn't get a single business class. That's insane if you think about it, right? Because healthcare is the only profession out there where you could be terrible at business and still run a $1 million business. If you run a coffee shop poorly, you're going to go out of business, but you can run a dental office poorly and you can still make $1 million. That's insane to think about. What if we could actually fine tune these businesses? I saw the other day a great comparison was like, it'd be like teaching a gorilla to actually work out. They're already ripped. Imagine if one actually had a great weightlifting program. So that's what I wanted to go do. We went through that whole process, and that's where we started to look at these different things with Simplify. And we thought, okay, we can't teach them business. We need to automate it, and we need to make it easy so that these practices don't need to think about a thing or don't change a thing. And that's the whole premise that Simplify is built on. Do nothing, make your life easier, and make more money. If we can do something magical like that, then we might have something.
I guess my next question is, how did you make your start in doing that?
We started, the first time I did it, it was a complete failure. And one of the things that we started with, we actually started with this really cool application on the Apple Watch. And actually back in the day, it actually started on Google Glass. That's where the EYE in our name comes from. We thought the Google Glass was going to be the coolest thing on Earth. It did not. Somebody made the term glass hole, and that was it. So we moved it to the Apple Watch, and it was really cool because we told doctors where to be in their office, who should be next, whether they had a latex allergy, when was the last time they saw them. And it was really nice. The problem was it was a change for a little bit more work. And I'm talking just a tad bit more work. So we tried to fix that workflow first and realized very quickly, because of our churn levels, that just can't really be done unless we automate it. So we started to look at other things out there. And the first one that hit in a big way, the first piece of that workflow that hit in a big way, was getting new patients into the practice. The reason we focused on that first and foremost was, if you're trying to help somebody fix a leaky bucket, right, there's a couple different ways you could do it. There's either you could plug all the holes on the side and continue to plug them when new ones form, or you could just dump a ton of water in the top and watch it overflow. That's what new patients are to our practice. You can almost fix a very poorly run business by just enough patients. So we focused on getting more new patients for the practice. We realized that all these doctors were doing a ton of marketing. They were just terrible at converting it. So there was a lot of different companies out there coming out, like Intercom and Drift with the bots, Intercom with the self-man chat. Problem was, is that you couldn't use Intercom because the practice just wasn't going to do more work. So we had to create something that was actually going to do it for the doctor. So that's what we did. We now have the largest 24/7 live chat service for doctors run by technology, and we call it Amplify because we've actually built some really cool machine learning and artificial intelligence into the back end to take a regular human being that could have one conversation, and now that conversation can actually be held 8 times at that exact same amount. So now one person can do the exact same amount of work as 8 people. So that's what we ended up scaling out and building it. And now we've got over 200 people chatting 24/7 throughout the United States. They're all either current or ex-front desk people, and we answer their questions 24/7 within about 7 seconds time. It's pretty cool. Yeah.
Gotcha. So can you tell me about your selling process then? Because I'm sure that this does affect the way that you have been selling to practitioners.
You're right. Yeah. But now we're completely inside sales, right? We're, as they would say, dialing for dollars. And that's what it was, except that was me. So it was a lot of calling friends and family members, I guess you could say, in the industry. The nice thing is that once you've went through the gauntlet that is dental school, you can say, hey, I went through a miserable time. You went through a miserable time. Listen to me. And so that made it a little bit better. At the same time, we still had to call. I was calling all my buddies saying, dude, will you please just use this on your website? I'll give it to you, you know, free of charge. Try this out. And then from there on, it was like, okay, wow, this actually worked. We were very surprised at first. I can't believe people are chatting. Then afterwards, we're like, oh my God, this is generating a huge amount of value. And then it's the, you have to ask people next, would you actually pay for this? And if they're like, of course, that's always a good sign, right? Especially if it's your friend, because friends don't want to help pay anybody anything. They want it for free. That's where we knew we had some. I remember Dr. Mark Stojkovich, he's up in the region, as they'd say in Indiana, up in Northwest Indiana. He was kind enough to allow me to put Amplify on his website. And in the first month, we generated 17 patients for him, new patients. If it tells you anything, ZocDoc, which has been around since Christ was a carpenter, if they get you 4 new patients, they're killing it. So we knew we had something right away, and it was more focused on, okay, now how do we scale this? It wasn't so much so how do we market it? How do we make this so if I add 500 people tomorrow that this thing just doesn't fall apart? And that was the race that we had to run next. We had to basically get this one person on. Okay, great. I got it together with sticks and glue. How do we engineer this so we could add 1,000 people, 2,000 people, maybe something like COVID hits and we become even more popular because of this moment? How do we add 2,000 people? Those kind of situations. Now you've got that business. And I can tell you what, that's very difficult. Yeah, really it's step by step, right? That's the looking back at it. First and foremost, surround yourself with an unbelievable team and do that step by step too. I think a lot of people will assume that, okay, I'm going to need this position. I'm going to need this position. And they do all this hiring at first. Then you have this huge amount of overhead. Get a couple of winners in place and you need freaking utility players, right? You need just full on winners that you can trust, that you can take a piece of your heart, a piece of your brain, transplant it, and never look back. And don't get me wrong, that is a terrible experience because you really do. You rip out a piece of your heart, hand it to them, you say, hey, do me a favor, take care of this, don't let it die. And there's a lot of, you have to put a lot of trust in that. So that's what I say, get your team under you first. After that, what happens is geniuses hire geniuses, right? And I'm not saying that I'm a genius by any means, but if you hire a bunch of geniuses, they tend to hire geniuses after them. And then it takes care of itself. As long as you can really listen to those people. I always say, if I wanted to hire a genius and tell them what to do, then I should have just hired an idiot, right? I can tell an idiot what to do. It doesn't matter to me. I want to bring somebody in that's had a bunch of experience before, and now they can help me not go over the same tripwires that they have seen others go through in the past. That's why startups are so special, in my opinion, that you're bringing all these people together who have gone through something unique, right? Like you're going through something, they've done something in their past, another person's done something in their past, and they've all seen crap hit the fan. There's a reason they're leaving their jobs and coming to work for Simplify. And I always tell people, when you join our company, you have two jobs. One, I want you to tell us everything that you loved about your past jobs, and we're going to do that. And then two, I want you to tell me every single thing that you hated about your past jobs, and we're never going to do that. Because there's a reason they're no longer at those last jobs. And usually, if they're truly honest about that, you can avoid a lot of pitfalls and you can go really freaking fast, which is truly the big weapon. So yeah, that's what it was. We got that team underneath us and then we just started to build out the software piece by piece. And the next piece was really just listening to our customers. If as long as you're listening to the customers, even when they're yelling at you, because if you think about it, if a customer takes the time to yell at you, it's because they care. If they really didn't want to help you out or they didn't really want you to succeed, they just cancel and they leave. So if they take the time out of their day, and doctors make a lot per hour, if they're going to take a lot out of their day and to yell at you, listen, they might be for something stupid and it's not always productive, but at the same time, most of the time they're saying, hey, could you fix this? I want to keep paying you. So we started to listen and it just evolved into this monster that is Amplify, and it's just fine-tuned machine. And live 24/7 live chat where you actually utilize people with a combination of technology, you have to do it step by step, because if you think about it, these large organizations with maybe tens of thousands of users right now, they can't just fire this up overnight because it would cripple their system. They would have to go out, hire 200 to 300 people, and then turn it on. It almost has to be grown in a grassroots methodology to have something like this. That's why it's so special, I think. Yeah.
What do you think about competition in this market of providing these digital tools for the healthcare space?
Competition is a flattering thing. And I also think that it shows you that it's a huge market too. If you're just going to live there by yourself in this giant market, you're either going to have some insane patent, which in software as a service world doesn't really exist, or it's just not that good of a market. So I think that competitors are just confirmation that you've picked a giant TAM. So I think that what we've done in the past is that we always try to get really real with our clients, meaning we are not the cheapest by any means. I always say you either want to be the most expensive or the cheapest in your market. Never be in between, because that's where you die. And we pick towards the higher end, and because we say, hey, look, we're the best. So you can either choose the best or you can go with something else. Now, what we do though is we are very real with doctors. And I used to not do this. And I used to be one of these doctors where I would call in and I would say something like, hey, there's plenty of enabling services out there where my front desk can chat for me. I'm going to do it myself. And now what's funny is, and I would have said something like that, right? Absolutely, I would have done that in the past. But I would not have thought of the repercussions on my team, on me, on that piece. I've learned to love scale now, right? And I've also learned to really say, okay, if I'm looking at this, a person that does this 24/7, they're probably better at it than me, usually. And if I'm going to be a dentist, I should be a dentist. If I'm going to be a plastic surgeon, I'm going to be a plastic surgeon. I don't need to be a plastic surgeon and a marketer. I get paid way more money to be a plastic surgeon. Why would I do the marketing too? Just hire somebody to do it and they'll do it better. So what we do is we'll say, hey, doc, do me a favor, put your front desk team on the phone. Hey, front desk team, I've got this really cool thing. It's going to get you 20 new patients a month. You're not going to make any more money if you're asked to man it. You have to man it 24/7 and you have to answer within 7 seconds and speak multiple languages. Are you in? And they'll go, there'll be a slight pause. The doctor will take us off the speakerphone, say, okay, you made your point and move on. Now, there's always people that leave. And what we do is we try to leave those moments open just for future products, right? We have a full revenue cycle management payments product coming out that's going to change everybody's life. And because we've left all of our bridges unburned, or hopefully as many as possible unburned, we can reach back out to those people and say, hey, how's it going? I know we didn't work out the first time, but check out this new product. And because they know it's a legit product, a legit company, they might be willing to try something again. And you'd be very surprised with, as long as you see leave something really good when customers leave, there is a large amount of those customers that tuck their tail between their legs and come back, because they do. They realize, okay, maybe I couldn't do it as well. And maybe you were actually adding value and I didn't notice that. At the end of the day, doctors and really a lot of the world is just really bad at math, right? So it takes them a while and they almost have to have a tangible burn to do the math and figure out, okay, there was a lot of value behind it. That's what, and as long as you are really good and you listen and you try to have an amicable split at the end of the day, usually it works out just fine. It's a big enough market.
I'm curious if you have advice around direct-to-consumer kinds of products.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. And what's interesting is that's what I would tell every entrepreneur when you start. I see so many of these, especially the direct-to-consumer market, which I get, that's really a big marketing play anyway. But see if you can do this without a huge amount of marketing to begin with. We just hired our head of marketing. We've been around for 5 years. So I think that would I have hired them a little bit earlier? Probably. But at the same time, not much, because our growth has been nice and consistent. We doubled quite often, and now we're ready to, you know, pour in the rocket fuel. Whereas a lot of people, they dump all of their investors' money, or they dump all of the money right off the marketing, which is very easy to do when you're not ready. And then on top of that, you might not be ready to scale either. That's a dangerous game to play. So I always tell people, try to bootstrap it at first.
Thank you, Ryan. I'm going to pass it off to my lovely co-host, Nico. Appreciate it.
Yeah.
Yeah, thanks, Iman. Definitely agree with the marketing spend point of view. I always think it's interesting. I look at some of these companies that have gone public that are the larger startups that have really high cost and most of it's marketing spend. And they say, oh, we're spending all this money on marketing because we want to grow a customer base. And don't worry, we'll be profitable the second we stop spending so much money on marketing. And I'm like, well, you can't, you know, obviously you can hope and you can assume, but you can't prove that until you do it.
Yep.
So
you got to ask about the repeat business on that marketing is the real question.
So it's always so interesting to see that. So I wanted to ask you, I know that Simplify offers a few products. So I just wondering if you can tell us and our listeners a brief description about the products that Simplify offers so they can better understand your business.
Yeah. So the first product that we offer is our Amplify product. That's our live chat. And what's interesting is we were always all about lead conversion. You're doing marketing out there. And what happens is if you imagine it as a marathon and somebody gets to the finish line, just stands there. They don't walk over. That's what marketing is. You're doing putting all those marketing dollars and your finish line is the website. But the problem is that you need them to schedule, right? You need them to schedule an appointment. Mm-hmm. That's your to walk over the finish line. That's where our 24/7 live chat comes on there. And we also have it without that. We also have just direct scheduling that we built in and we can integrate into your electronic health record and write directly to your schedule. So that's pretty common that people need that now, but you'd be surprised how underserved that market is. But we're there to answer the patient's question, let them know that they made the correct decision, give them that big warm hug, and then schedule them. That's our biggest thing. Now, what's interesting is all of a sudden COVID hit, right? And we turned from this lead conversion tool into a digital front desk because a lot of these front desk team members, they were let go, sent home, furloughed, whatever it might be. And, or even now that when people come back, the demand is still there. But now maybe when you were able to fit five people in that small front desk area, now you can only fit two. So now all these people are overwhelmed and they don't have digital telephones. So that's where Amplify really has come into the spotlight. And we've grown our business in a gigantic way during COVID and helped out a lot of these offices. Now, the other thing that we've integrated in with our Amplify product is we've also integrated in telehealth, which is also very interesting. It seems like everybody and their, you know, brother and sister are doing telehealth now. The thing that people don't really think about is the implementation of telehealth. So what we did is we said, okay, we have this really nice digital front desk. We have a payments platform that I'm going to talk to you about here in a second. What we're missing in the middle to have this beautiful implementation of telehealth is just a telehealth portion. So what we did is we had a really quick sprint. We built out telehealth in a very simplistic manner, just like a FaceTime, like you would see. But we built it so that now our chat team can schedule the telehealth appointment or have it live. We can collect a credit card and tokenize it and save it and put it on file. So you can actually bill for the visit. And then on top of that, we even collect consent. So now we can actually gather that consent prior to the patient going through the appointment and then afterwards help schedule them into the appointment to get them into the office. So it's literally a start to finish what we like to call a virtual practice in a box. So a lot of people have telehealth solutions, but nobody out there really thinks about the billing or the consent portion. So we built that in there and it took off like wildfire. So we implemented a lot of that stuff. Okay, so now we've got Amplify. We like to call our Connect product, which is telehealth. Mm-hmm. And then that all leads into our newest piece, which is our revenue cycle management product, which is our billing product or our payments platform. And this was something that we were always going to bring out. And then COVID hit, so we put a pause on it. Obviously, it's not really cool to be a payments company just yet, but now it's starting to ramp back up. Our payments product, it focuses on helping practices where they need it most with their revenue cycle management. We focus on things like contactless payments, so giving them the proper hardware to do, you know, Apple Pay and Google Pay. We also allow them to send text and email invoices. I'm sure that you've received a paper bill from your doctor. It's hilarious because every time I get that, I'm like, what the hell am I supposed to do with this? How do I pay this? Do I call them and give a credit card over the phone? So we've gotten rid of that. So now you send text and email invoices, so they'll actually pay them. And then last, we actually focused on payment plans. So when you used to walk in Nordstrom or Macy's or anything like that, when you would go and swipe on checkout, or even better yet, when you go to buy a Casper mattress online or really anything in Amazon, you now have the ability to break down your final total into payments. We see it everywhere. Everybody's asking for it. And guess what? Now that a lot of people have lost their jobs, people are uncertain, people are only going to ask for more of that. Mm-hmm. So what we did is we looked at how do we implement something like that with those tools. So we gave the doctor the ability to run a soft credit check on all their patients if they'd like to before they do a payment plan. And on top of that, then they can negotiate with the patient, actually say, okay, can you afford to put $1,000 down today? Fantastic. They'll break it up into this payment. You show it to them. You're really transparent about everything. And then last, we tokenize the credit card, the debit card, or the ACH information, and we automatically bill it every single month, basically like a digital front desk. So that's what we've done. We've basically created a start to finish. We'll get the patient into the practice. We can even help you see their first visit via virtual. We'll put a credit card on file. They'll come into the practice. They're enabled to actually pay for something, and then we keep them coming back every single time. So we've tried to really digitize that front office experience.
Gotcha. And that sounds amazing, being able to manage everything from front to back. For that payment system, though, I have to ask, are you guys leveraging any third parties? Like a company that comes to mind right off the bat for payments is Affirm, or are you guys doing this completely in-house?
We are doing it in-house. So basically, yeah.
You guys are also calculating risk accordingly?
That is. Yeah, that's correct. So Affirm is a great example. So what's interesting and the big secret that it was funny, the Wall Street Journal actually had a great article on them. I'm not sure if you guys have heard of Cross River Bank. Have you guys heard of them?
I have not.
So it's interesting. So you've heard of Affirm, but you haven't heard of Cross River Bank is the magic behind Affirm. And so what's interesting is that they will actually pre-qualify people based on certain risk levels, and they will go out and do loan origination of smaller banks, which is pretty cool for them. And it's all built into APIs. They are based in New Jersey. Yeah. Tons. Yep. Yeah, Klarna. No, absolutely.
Klarna as well, yeah.
It was wild because it blew my mind reading this article. I'm like, oh my God. I understand why Cross River Bank did it, but I can't believe that Affirm or these other guys out there that are multi-billion dollar valuations, like secrets out. And on top of that, nobody's doing this in healthcare. Like the closest you can come is Care Credit or LendingTree, like you said. But the problem is that because there's no competition there, they charge exorbitant amounts, right? Care Credit take 10% from the doctor and charges the patient 34% after 6 months, right? So if you come in there with this low cost alternative, right? And the way we're doing it at first is we're starting off by having the doctor hold the paper. So what we do is we actually walk in, we do a soft credit check on the patient. We tell the doctor, hey, look, this guy's got a 720 credit score. We make it easier to interpret than that by just giving them literally a thumbs up or a thumbs down. And we base it off of the credit profile that they choose. So that actually simplify making them a recommendation. We say, doc, do you want to be risky or not risky? And based on that, we give them thumbs up or thumbs down based on the patient, based on the algorithm that they choose. So what's nice is then they hold the paper to start. Now, there's always going to be doctors, like you just said, Nico, that are like never really comfortable with holding the paper, which is fine. And hey, on a $15,000 treatment plan, they shouldn't probably, right? Unless they've got a huge amount of backing. Now, granted, remember, we're only approving people who are actually going to pay for it or a much higher likelihood to pay for it, but at the same time, there's still risk. So for that, what we're doing is eventually we're doing that integration with Cross River Bank, and we're going to be able to do loan origination in the exact same way that Affirm does, which is pretty cool.
That is really cool. So I do have some clarifying questions, and I'm sure our audience does as well. So for Cross River Bank, is it essentially that Affirm, like they're on the website, someone says, I'll pay payments with Affirm. Affirm's like, all right, this is this person's profile, sends it to Cross River Bank, is then like, all right, we have this capital, we can lend it to you guys, given this risk profile. And then they go to smaller banks and say, hey, we have this type of loan that we need to finance. Would you be interested in it? Is that how that works?
Yeah. Yeah. So basically what happens is you set a pre-negotiated rate with Cross River, and Cross River does a pre-negotiated rate with those smaller banks. So they'll go out to Bank John Smith Bank and say, hey, look, I got a guy, he needs $50 million in credit availability. As long as he or she passes you people with 720 credit scores and this and this, and you have to pre-qualify with their APIs. As long as they do this, I want guaranteed instant approval for that person. And basically what happens is they go, okay, cool, I'm in. And then they set up through these APIs that they've created and their partner banks, this automatic approval process. So what you do is it allows us to simplify to give instantaneous approval for the doctor, which used to be a long drawn out process. Or maybe you had to build your own infrastructure, which is even more awful because now I basically have to become a bank. Okay.
Right.
And what's interesting is then you pass that paper. They, because your preset qualifications, what happens is you can say, yep, patient X, you're good to go. Doctor, here's your money, or your money is going to be delivered in the next 48 hours. So you don't worry either. What happens is that instantaneously, the paper gets passed to Cross River Bank. They hold it for 24 hours. They have the choice of either taking it themselves as a bank, or they will pass it on to that member bank and it will take a chunk out of that $50 million of credit.
Gotcha.
It's quite genius. Yeah, it's pretty wild.
So that's...
Affirm's basically a front end.
Yeah, that's so interesting because I guess like the whole... I don't know. I feel like the whole like startup ethos is to cut out the middleman, but Affirm's... It seems like Affirm's back-end business model is fundamentally to be a middleman.
Yeah, and now what's interesting...
is to originate loans.
Yeah, you'll see with Affirm now though, they've finally got big enough and their market cap's gotten big enough that they're starting to hold the paper themselves. Gotcha. Now what's neat about Cross River is you have all these different options with in there too. Like you can do your own servicing. You don't have to do your own servicing. Like in the case of Simplify, if we utilize that, we would do our own servicing. So there's all kinds of different things you can do. And now I think what Affirm's plan is, and I admire this, I've done this before too. It's like you utilize software to get you to a certain point, you get a threshold of users, and then you build out that software and you replace it completely. I love that business plan. I think it's absolutely genius. I've done it multiple times where I've utilized software to see if something works. And then if it works really well, you build your own version of that, right? Highly recommend that to entrepreneurs. Use software, growth hack it together, get the users. It'll cost you money. Yes, that sucks. But all of a sudden, when you magically delete that software out of the middle, that's all revenue for you. So I think that's what Affirm's doing. I think it's what Klarna's doing. That's the dangerous part about being cross river at the end of the day, but I'm sure they're doing just fine.
Got it. Okay, got it. So that, wow, that is, I do like that business model. That's quite the game plan.
Yeah.
So, and then my question is, on top of that, when it just comes, so less about Affirm and more back to Simplify and how it relates to like the health space, but I think it was a really good tangent, is I know for dentists, and this comes back to billing and trying to understand, like when we talk about procedures. So when you're doing these types of claims, two parts. One of the quotes from earlier tonight, which I love, is that like for hospitals, like medicine is one of the few things where you can have $1 million business and still just be bad at it. So on that, it's like, how do you talk to doctors and dentists about like, here's a risk profile. How do you help them understand that and say like, this is something that might be good or bad or X, Y, Z?
You have to, I don't want to say dumb it down because it's not dumbing it down because they're very smart people. Mm-hmm. You have to put it in terms that they understand. You have to point out where the burn is. So you have to say, hey doc, do me a favor, break out your statement. Okay, cool. That fee there that says like $800 and they're like, oh yeah, never noticed that. Yeah, you have that times four every single month for no reason. Mm-hmm. So you have to show them, you can't say, oh, that's a this fee, that's a that fee. They'll be like, oh, okay. And they'll just let it glaze over. Because that's the thing, nobody likes to sound dumb. So you really have to point out tangible spots where it's actually hurting them. Because if you don't do that, they don't feel the sting. Right? So that's where a lot of our marketing focus is. Do you pay more than 0% on your merchant fees? Mm-hmm. Of course they do. Cool. If you do, talk to us. So you have to find huge hair on fire pain points, even if the pain point that you're focusing on is a subcategory of a subcategory of a subcategory. You have to focus on the giant hair on fire problem. And you also have to be very specific on the person you're talking to. Right? Because if I talk to a front desk team member at any healthcare practice in the world and I say, hey, I'm going to get you a ton of new patients. Aren't you excited? Do they get paid any more money if they see 100 patients a day or they see 4 patients a day? They right. don't at all. So they're completely different incentives. So I have to talk to a front desk team member and say, hey, do you hate talking to people all day long about stupid things on the phone? They're like, yes. Cool. What if I could unload 40% of those phone calls for you? They'd be like, mm-hmm. I would love you. Cool. Let me show you this product. Then you go to the doctor and you say, hey, doc, do you like making tons of money? Yes, I do. Cool. Let me show you. I'm going to get you a ton of new patients. So you have to be very specific on the problem that's actually hitting them. But that's how easy we talk about it. We say, do you like more money? Do you want more new patients? Mm-hmm. Right? We don't talk how we get it. We let the doctor ask the question and then we'll go into the details. If they don't want to go detailed, a lot of times you'll find on a sales process, you're talking yourself out of a sale instead of talking yourself into it. Yeah.
Could you elaborate on that just a bit?
Yeah. That's where one of the things that I had to learn the hard way, I loved talking features of a product. I love it because it's so cool. Let me show you this feature and this flashy gizmo that we built into everything. And then at the end, what I didn't realize is I'm complicating the crap out of this product, right? They came to me saying, I want more new patients. I should have just said, we get you more new patients. How do you do that? We chat with them and we schedule them. How's that sound? Oh, that makes a lot of sense. Okay, see you later. I'll take your credit card, right? That's how that conversation should go on the highest level, obviously. Then if they're like, wait, how do you do that? Are you HIPAA compliant? Okay, let them ask those questions. Because let me tell you about the HIPAA compliance and our 256-bit AES encryption. They don't give a crap. They don't care how the sausage is made. They just want to eat the sausage at the end of the day. If you bog it down, there's some people that love that too. And if they do, I'm ready for that. Our salespeople are ready for that. But 99% of the time, they just want to hear that when they put in $1 into your machine, you're going to hand them 14 on the other side, or you're going to hand them 20, or you're going to hand them 6. That's all they really care about, or they should care about. There's a lot of people out there that just are in it for the love of the game and they want fun gizmos. And that's fine too. I love those people because they're very easy sells. But at the same time, there's not a lot of those people out there. That's not 90% of the market. So you just got to be very good on your sales pitch that you can actually talk to those, like I was saying, different personality types within a practice because they have not been conditioned on the business side and they're definitely not going to sit there with a calculator and do the math and figure out the ROI right off the bat. You got to shove that in their face too, which is something to say about metrics. Yeah.
No, that's so funny. I love the way you put it. Most of the time you're talking yourself out of a cell rather than into a cell, because the more information you bring up, that then poses the more questions and it looks like more and more moving parts for people. And I've definitely seen that with others with software where I'm like, I just want to chat with people. And then it's speaking like Facebook Messenger. It's like, I just want to chat with people. And then it's, oh, we have video call. You can send money now and you can do these other things. And it's like, okay, I don't need that at the moment.
Messenger is the best example of that that I've probably ever heard.
Really?
If you think of iMessage, it's beautiful. Mm-hmm. Chat, and that's it. If you want to use an app, sure, they're there. But Messenger focused on that AI bullcrap and all their apps, and you can pass cash back and forth, and nobody uses it. It's probably because it's Facebook too, and it's evil. But at the same time, it's nobody used it because of that. It's why WhatsApp, I think, had more success because it was freaking simple.
Yeah, right? Now that it's acquired by Facebook, we'll see how that turns out.
That's right.
And then for that, because I think, so I want to hit on sales since we're on this topic, and that's one of the biggest, I think, thresholds that entrepreneurs face when they first start is like the selling process.
Yeah.
How do you balance, and it might be easier when it's just an MVP and there is only one feature, but when you have these multiple features, like you have Amplify, which seems to be like, it seems like the bread and butter of Simplify, but then it's also like, hey, we have the scheduling work that will take off workload from your employees, and we have the Connect feature as well. Like, how do you also have those conversations where you're like, hey, I know you want X, but we do X really well, but we also do Y and Z really.
Yeah, that was a tough transition for us. So hire good salespeople first. hire a great direct. I don't say you need a VP of sales right away. Mm-hmm. I always say that's the other kicker. One of my big recommendations is hire a director of sales, a really hungry director of sales, mm-hmm. who will then earn that VP spot. Right? Because directors are, they've still had their hands in the dirt lately, and they know how to get there. And they're so close to being a VP anyways. And look, you can teach them how to do Salesforce and do, financial reports. And if you get a good head of finance, they'll force them into those positions. But make sure you get somebody that's still willing to roll in the dirt a little bit. When it comes to really segueing into other talks, the way that we built out our pitch is you have to interview. And it's really interesting. So you do a brief introduction. And then what we do after that is we start talking about the doctor. We know what our product can do, but we really need to focus more so on how can I ask a question that evokes them talking about a problem they have that then I'm going to be able to solve. So what we did is we created a list of 10, 12 questions that we're going to ask. It has to be quick because you can't waste your time. Mm-hmm. Also, by the way, quick bonus points for anybody. Never, when you're setting up a meeting with a doctor, it's only 10 minutes. It might be 30 minutes, it might be 40 minutes, but you're setting a 10 to 15 minute meeting max. If the doctor wants to go more time, they'll go more time, but never ask for more than 10 minutes on a doctor's schedule. They can also always find 10 minutes. Okay. That's a big hint for everybody out there. But when you're doing those, back to what we were talking about, when you're doing those interview questions, you're setting them up to start almost beefing about the hair on fire problems I was talking about earlier. Like, oh man, I know our practice is set up. It's just, we're not getting enough new patients. Oh yeah. So what kind of marketing you do? Oh man, I do this marketing and that marketing. I'm really good at marketing. Oh, nice. Yeah. You do any social media? They'll brag on their social media. They go down the line and you really want to turn them into bragging, right? About their practice. And you're complimenting them the whole way. And then what's nice is you say, cool, how many patients are you getting from that? And for a fact, unless they're a metrics nut, which is also more exciting too, because then you're going to sell it really well, but you're waiting for them to go, I don't know. Okay, cool. Don't worry. You're like every other doctor out there. And you're almost asking them these questions, evoke it in their brain. You're like, oh God, maybe I'm not getting any patients. I'm paying 10 grand a month. So I think you start to walk them down these questions. And then what you do, and we teach our sales reps to do, is you customize your pitch. You don't have to pitch everything we have. If they didn't bring up specifically telehealth, don't you dare talk about telehealth. 99% of the people out there hate telehealth. It's a very big buzzword right now, and you would think that it's like huge. Zoom and it's awesome. No, all these doctors hate that. They were forced into doing telehealth. Simplify offers telehealth. We love it. But if my main business was telehealth, I'd go out of business right now because everybody just went back to work and nobody's doing telehealth anymore. There's a handful of 10% of doctors out there that are still doing something with telehealth. They're all using some sort of bastardized method of telehealth out there too, which is also fine. Who knows what ends up coming of it? And if we all go back indoors, which is where everything's trending right now, maybe it becomes an even bigger deal. Who knows? But we have to customize our pitches, right? If nobody ever talked about, we always had those doctors. And this is also nice to have multiple products too. When you're originally part of, I only had Amplify, we had to pick which pieces of Amplify to talk about. If they're like, I have way too many new patients, you should still talk about how we get new patients, but now you're going to talk more about how it's the kind of new patients. If I sent you a brand new implant case that generated 40 grand, would you make room in your full schedule? Of course you would. So you have to really know your handbook, I guess, guess you could say, we made this beautiful handbook, and this can only be grown out of pain, right? But you have to come up with this handbook that for every situation, like, oh, I have this. You have to have a rebuttal for each one. And in order to do that, you have to have great salespeople who are willing to take hits and willing to take great.
Yeah.
And it takes a lot of learning to do that, sadly. Hopefully people that are listening to the podcast are now going, oh my God, I got to record every single call. I need to go back through these calls. I need to be retrospective. Or they're thinking,
absolutely.
Oh, shit, that's why I haven't had that success. Both work. Just one's a little bit slower. It's fine. I was the latter, sadly.
No, absolutely. And it's just developing that tribal knowledge through a shared experience when you start really getting the really key and gold nuggets of information. I think you see that in most really high performing organizations. It's we're like, we did this, it didn't work. And like these types of problems we kept running into. So here's how we approach it XYZ. And that's you just have to do it, which is tough.
Yeah. And that's the thing. I always said, you know, what I was saying earlier, hopefully you can hire people who have suffered in the past at a different company and they will show up and say, oh, don't do that. I've suffered in the past. And hopefully you are smart enough as a CEO founder to listen to that too. Because a lot of times you'll be like, as a founder, oh, that was because those people were stupid. And you are going to be just as stupid as those people. So hopefully you listen and you don't make those mistakes. A lot of times, especially in the sales world, a lot of things aren't unique. They're very common. Psychology of a human being is very similar. Doctors are unique in the fact that their psyche is a little bit different and they tend to be somewhat of a know-it-all. And I can only say that because I guess I'm a doctor. But at the same time, I get it, right? We just came out of years of school thinking that we're geniuses and then we find out, oh, we know nothing about business. It is frustrating. Mm-hmm. So there's a little different change in psyche when it comes to sales with that. But other than that, it's very similar concepts. All those books apply.
Do you have an example of kind of a lesson that someone brought with them from a previous place? Because I could totally see that. I'm like, when you start talking about entrepreneurship and tech, like the first thing people are talking about, we're doing this because XYZ couldn't do it well, or they're not doing it well. And so when people are like, yeah, we had this problem at this place doing the same thing, you're like, that's because like their product was inherently bad, or like their processes weren't inherently aligned.
Yeah. So we actually hired a fantastic head of CS to start. His name is Dylan Kaiser. He's remarkable. He's now our VP of operations, but he came in and he actually made it so our CS department was very well organized. Okay. So customer service. Yeah. Sorry about that. The You're acronym good. World, right?
Yeah.
So I think that's one thing that put us light years ahead of a lot of people, that because we utilize Salesforce as our back end, as everybody either does or eventually will. And what we did is he set up the system so that every single cancel reason was categorized and subcategorized, and that all of our calls were recorded, and that we set up a process to go through and really analyze those calls and to set up a good cadence of one-on-ones. And you can tell why he is literally like the most ideal VP of ops in the world. He's my Tim Cook. So I think that was huge, because I'm a growth hacker, right? So I would put something together with sticks and glue, see if it works, stand it up, and I pass it off to engineering or somebody else to somehow make it scalable. Mm-hmm. And I've gotten better at the scale side of things over the last 5 years. But that's where I came from, because I'm all about speed. I want to see if it works, because I know that's the greatest weapon that we have. It was getting somebody in there that really understands process and understands the value of that, because I didn't respect that at all, right? Mm-hmm. I was all about getting stuff done, moving fast, breaking things, and getting it out the door, which is what you need in that first year of being a startup. You need to be messy. You need to be gritty and rough. But as soon as you start to get 100 clients on there, that doesn't work anymore. When you get to 300, it really doesn't work. And when you get to 1,000, you're going to die if you don't have CS in place. So it was getting that in place. And thank God we had somebody there that knew what they were doing with that really helped us. It saved our butt. And we owe a lot of it to that process. And that process turned out expanding into sales. And then that from sales went into marketing. And it just becomes part of your culture to have things organized after that, because I can tell you, I am the opposite of organized. I can promise you
that. No, that's fantastic to hear. I've definitely seen that in someone internally for an ops role, and that really just turns a business around.
Yeah.
So that's really exciting, and that's super great to hear. I know that's when you're building things and when you're just going, it's so hard to take the time to actually be retrospective. Even just with this podcast, Amon and I, like, we're trying to push out content as fast as we can, but also at the same time trying to view how content's been doing, and it just it's quite a bit of work.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, being retrospective, that's the thing. It's funny. A lot of these doctors during this COVID moment, it was a tragedy, right? For all of these, I don't know if you saw this, but dental was disproportionately hit from this. Mm-hmm. I think 10% of unemployment was from the dental space. It's something insane like that. That huge bounce back in jobs was because all the dentists went back to work. So, but what's interesting that happened, and I was telling a lot of these doctors, I'm like, look, a lot of these doctors, they weren't implementing technology. They weren't implementing new things in their practice, not because they didn't want to. It was because they couldn't stop the bullet train mm-hmm. to get off, look at what they need, assess their practice, and put something new in. So a lot of these doctors took this moment, not just in dentistry, but just all around to implement new technology, possibly remove a couple of people that were, you know, holding them down, implement some tech there that would take the place of those people. So a lot of things happened in this downtime where they actually had the time to do that retrospective look and self-improve. So we saw a lot of that, and it's really cool.
No, that's fantastic. And I love that. Yeah. A great way to use this time off productively.
Yeah.
So I do have one more question for you, and then we'll wrap up. I was curious because I did see this is one of it's a big feature of your guys' platform. It's the 24/7 hotline that you guys run through the Amplify platform.
Yeah.
Question is, how do you staff? I see these things on other companies too that promise 24/7. So if someone's trying to do 24/7 customer support and things like that, like how do you go about staffing those types of hotlines? Do you contract out? Is it in-house? Things like that.
Yeah. It's all in-house. And it's, I can tell you this, time zones are your friend. Mm-hmm. So play wisely with those. But at the same time, you'd be surprised when you get to this somewhat of a gig economy, people are willing to do whatever they need to do to get the work done. And you have to incentivize. So you have to possibly, for the person who's staying up overnight, one, it's not as busy. So if you're looking to make a much easier buck, overnight's great. It's pretty smooth. It's pretty relaxed. Or if you want to make extra money and you just want to take a crazy night job at the same time, there's people like that. But yeah, staffing is a nightmare. You just have to have really good people to run that. You also have to have great people to actually listen to the plight of that worker, because there's really interesting things that happen. We have some of those workers that get pregnant, right? And that's mm-hmm. not healthy for them. So we have to switch them to the day crew. And there's family members who are having kids or have a problem with the family and they need to move to day, or they need to move from day to night. Staffing is somewhat of a nightmare. But at the same time, once you get it down and you get a good threshold of the number of people that are working, you can have people that no show, you can have people that kind of screw with the system a little bit, and mm-hmm. you're still okay. It takes a special threshold to get to that. You have to make sure that original team that you put in place is really good. You have to have good managers. You have to have good technology. Make those managers' jobs not crazy as well. So we built a lot of in-house technology, like our AI that actually looks at the grammatical error, so you don't have to go over it every single time. It used to be miserable for a lot of those things. So staffing is one of the toughest pieces of the whole puzzle. But once you get it down and you scale it out, it's not that bad. But it's just step by step. So I always tell people, take everything step by step. I promise you'll finally get to the finish line and you'll look back and go, how the hell did I pull that off? At least that's how I feel.
No, I love that. Because even just thinking about that, you're talking about like the AI in the back end. And I'm like, when do you have time to start building that? And I was just like, I just want to be able to chat with people, like first and foremost. And I was like, automatically correcting grammar. But I think that's, so is that what you summarize? If you had to summarize like your past 5 years on this journey, would you say that taking it step by step is probably a good way to describe that?
Yeah, I think that any entrepreneur that looks back and tells you that went exactly according to the plan, they're full of shit. There's no way. And that's a very pompous thing to say. They can say that, oh, hey, I had this dream of accomplishing this. Mm-hmm. I had no clue of the steps in between. Like, because if you're like, I'm telling you, if you showed most entrepreneurs when they start exactly what the road, the trials and tribulations look like, and you don't guarantee them the finish line, there would be, I would say 90% of the people would run for the hills. Mm-hmm. Right? There's some days where I have the highest of highs, and in the same freaking 24 hours, I have the lowest of lows. But it's also what makes it interesting. So you end up at the end of the day going, oh, you always look back at it now. Like the way I look back at it, I've seen some crazy crap in my company. Mm-hmm. I look back now and I only remember the fond stuff. I only remember the good stuff, like the friends I've made, the cool connections I've done, the amazing technology that we've built. You don't really remember. You remember that, oh, there's some bad times. And yeah, there's some bad ones that stick out in your head. Mm-hmm. But that's not what you really look at. So I tell people, like, take the first step. I would say that 99% of the world gets locked up on the first step. They think they can do it. They have this amazing idea, but there's comfort on the other side.
Yeah.
And I get the whole comfort thing. I understand it. I could have been an orthodontist. You can make the $300,000 to $500,000 a year job. It's awesome. I lived in Manhattan Beach. It's as good as you get. I don't know what made me, you know, take that step. I must be insane. But at the same time, I'm so happy that I did because of the people that I met, the lives that we've changed with this company, the number of jobs that we've created. I wouldn't have gotten to do that as an orthodontist. And I've still gotten to practice a little bit of ortho on the side as well to keep my hands wet, as you'd say. So it's been,
literally.
It's been a great ride. Yeah, yeah, literally. It's been a great ride, but I can tell all the other entrepreneurs out there, just frickin' take the first step. And then all of a sudden you'll figure out that you're sprinting and you'll look back and wonder, how the hell did I pull that off?
Love that. So for all of you out there listening, if you guys have an idea, just take that first step. Ryan, we really appreciate having you on the show. Iman, do you have any final questions before I ask the final wrap up question?
Of course.
Yeah, Ryan, we loved having you on the show. And for anyone that is interested in learning more about the work that you do at Simplify, the product itself, where should they go?
Yeah, you can go to simplify.com, SimplifyE.com. And believe it or not, we have a live chat there. You can chat with us live 24/7. And we'd love to chat with you and talk more about our stuff or any other questions you might have. You can always reach out to me directly.
Fantastic. Thank you, Ryan. Really appreciate it.
No problem.
If you made it this far in the episode, congratulations. You're one of our super fans. If you go to our podcast website, you can find our email. And if you reach out to us via email with one of your takeaways from today's episode, we'll give you a free 30-minute call where we'll answer any and all questions you have around digital health or startups.